McKay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lost Rhetoric, a dim space for light hearts where we discuss all manner of odd. My name is Jason Dinges. Thank you for being here with me. I really appreciate it. I'm going to try to keep this intro pretty short. I'm kind of feeling a bit under the weather. My son's been sick, and I got a little dose of it. We tested him for COVID, negative. I don't know if that's still the case, but you know, when people get sick now, there's an extra layer of fear. It's just, it could be worse than a fucking cold, and it's when you get a scratchy throat, all sorts of stuff goes through your brain, you know? But so far, so good. I'm just, whatever. I'm not feeling my best. So let's get through this. All right. Last week, episode 57, talked to Jesse Gee about time travel. It was an excellent episode, super fun. Please go back, listen to it, tell me what you think. This week, Micah Castle is with me. Now, bear with me because this is a very local episode. And if you've been paying attention, you know last year or earlier this year, like my first episode of 2021 was an episode about my hometown in Winchester, Virginia, about basically about ghost stories with my friend Dustin Grim Deeds, who we talked about our hometown. That might not be of any interest to you specifically, the town or whatever, but the stories are cool. So if you've been paying attention, you know that my family and I just moved to Silverton, Oregon. And I've never met Micah, to my knowledge, but he's in a band called The Mistons with Sean Krogan, who was a guest of mine a few months ago. And when he found out I lived in Silverton, he reached out and he said, "Holy shit, dude, I'm from there. I grew up there. I got a bunch of weird stories to tell you. We should talk." And I immediately said yes. And this was the easiest episode to put together ever because I didn't have to do any research. I didn't want to do any research. I just wanted to listen and learn from someone who's got a wealth of knowledge of the area and a wealth of knowledge of weird Silverton. So that's what the episode is about tonight. And hopefully you just have an interest in weird stories. You don't even have to care about this region of Oregon at all. But we do, and it's a fun conversation. It was a really good time. I'm really glad Micah reached out because he had a lot of fun stuff to talk about. So that is what is happening tonight. Now let's just get into what we always get into here. What am I listening to? Well, there is I guess they're a new group. I don't know how long they've been around, but it's a group called Bo Jackson, like, you know, the football player, baseball player. And it's The Alchemist and Boldy James. And, you know, it's a great producer, DJ, and The Alchemist, and an MC, and Boldy James. And I don't know anything about Boldy James, but I like him now. I've been a fan of The Alchemist for a while. Everything he does seems to be really good. Bo Jackson is no exception. So, yeah, check that out. If you're into that, if you're into some really good hip hop, and I'm just glad someone finally named their band Bo Jackson. You know, I thought it would be a grindcore band first, but they beat the grind scene to it. Another band I've been listening to is called Pink Shift. They have an album out called Saccharin. They're from Baltimore, and you know, I feel like typically I wouldn't normally listen to music like this. It's kind of like melodic. It's definitely got some like hardcore elements, but it's kind of like this poppy, melodic hardcore stuff. I don't want to say pop punk cause I don't think it's pop punk, but, it's good. It's good songwriting. Like you can see him playing a hardcore show and you can see him playing a shitty emo show or like a shitty punk show, you know, like shitty meaning they're the best part of it. And they're probably playing with some band that they're better than. But yeah, they're good. Pink Shift, check out them. And on the pink tip, sticking to the pink theme, there's a band called the Pink Stones. They have an album called Introducing the Pink Stones. And I don't know if that's just a Pink Floyd, Rolling Stones hybrid thing. But they have an album It's out on Normal Town Records. Now that I fucking got it all confused, they have an album on Normal Town Records called Introducing the Pink Stones. And I'm going to just read their description of themselves, or someone's description of them on their website. Classic cosmic country, raucous rock and roll, and fresh humor and heartaches. The Pink Stones are authoring a new chapter in the annals of cosmic American music. Yeah, so that's that. I agree with that. I don't know what classic cosmic country is. I want to know more examples of that. I hear some Flying Burrito Brothers for sure in this group, amongst other things. But check out the Pink Stones if you're into that. And the last thing I've been listening to is a Mexican group called Margaritas Podridas. They got this 90s grunge shit down. It's like, oh man, it's really good music, but they got the look. It's ladies in doll dresses with makeup. They just look distressed and disheveled. And there's just shrieking and distortion and really good melodies too. They're really good songwriters. But it really takes you back. And they got the sound and the look to boot. So check out Margaritas Podridas. And that is what I've been listening to. Okay, so we are going to get into some Call Me Crazy here in a second. But before I get into that, let's talk shop. Like, follow, comment, share links, do all of that stuff online. And you can do all of that wherever you listen to podcasts, I'm sure. Whatever you can do within that platform, do it. Click whatever button that affirms your love for this show. And if you want to get in touch with me, LostRhetoricPodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram at LostRhetoricPodcast, Twitter Lost_Rhetoric. I'm still trying to grow that Twitter fan base, which is seemingly impossible. It's just a massive abyss of nothing. But yay. Find me and follow me, you know. I post stuff every once in a while. I think that's it. Oh, LostRhetoric.com, the website. You can find every episode there. And you can find the shop with all the merchandise that is dirt cheap right now for all of your holiday needs or just regular, everyday, non-holiday needs. Check that out. I would love to sell you some stuff. I would love for you to listen to every episode. You can comment on the episodes on the website as well. And yeah, that's it. So this week on Call Me Crazy, my friend Mateo joins me to tell me a quick story of a UFO he believed was following him or them, him and his friends, in Taos, New Mexico. So here's that.
Call me crazy, but one time my most inspiring artistic friend, like the only person that I knew that like actually DJed and made mixtapes and was an incredible artist, had a show in Taos, New Mexico. So I'm sure you're familiar with the excitement of like, oh my God, let's go see our friend's opening gallery show in Taos. So so me and my buddy Rafael drive up there in his Cadillac, beautiful Cadillac. Perfect. And it's like very typical Taos crowd of, you know, musty hippies, and the gallery was awesome, and you know, the outskirts of like the little quasi desert, beautiful landscape. And of course they're like, oh, we're gonna go party at so-and-so's cabin house deep in the woods or whatever. And it was already like, you know, not quite night yet, but like the gallery had gone on, we had drunk a little bit, but we weren't like drunk or anything. And maybe we smoked one joint at the gallery and we're like, all right, let's jump in the car and let's follow these people to the house, you know, back before GPS and all that.
Right.
So it's like that beautiful sunset, what do you call it, twilight hour. And before we leave, you know how in New Mexico it's like it's pretty flat and dry for a while before you kind of enter that like the drive in the woods kind of section. And while it was still kind of like clear and flat, I had noticed what I thought was, I don't know, a star, you know, like a very bright, you know, early of the evening star kind of thing. And I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh, cool, you know, and it's just me and my friend. And I'm like a little high, I'm a little buzzed. And we're driving the Cadillac and it's, you know, it's really nice. We're like feeling really great. And you know, we're driving in whatever direction. And I first I thought like, oh, the star is still there. We're driving in the direction of like wherever, where the angle is, where I can still see this star. And as we transition into like the forest and the windy roads, I forgot about the star and I'm zoning out and I remember thinking like, whoa, these trees got real big, real tall, real fast. Like, are we, let's not get lost. Like, let's speed up, like make sure that we don't get too far behind in case they turn and we don't see them turn. And as we're kind of trying to focus on making sure that we're following whoever we're following, and you know how beautiful the landscape is in Taos in northern New Mexico. I'm like really taking it in and looking around. And I look up and I see the star again. And I just remember thinking like, I don't see any other stars. I don't see anything else. I can't really see the sky. It's forest. It's tall trees. And I tell my buddy like, oh, I think this star is following us. He's like, whatever, dude. And it just got windier and darker and darker. And it was a long drive. And I just kept looking out. And the star at times seemed like it was just right at the tip of where like the trees ended. And then other times it would seem like it was like really far away. Really far away. And then it would come back.
Like it was checking in on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like specifically you, like your caravan or whatever. It was.
Yeah. And it wasn't a lot of caravans. It was like we were just following one other car.
So it's just two cars in the middle of the woods at this point.
And I was legit like, no, this thing is, I don't think this is a star anymore. And I was like, this is, there's a bright light that gets close enough to where like the top of the trees are. And it's just an orb. And it starts to look, you know, it's not just like, just a white light. Like I start to see like weird, like crescent shades of like red. And you know, but I'm in a car, I'm in a Cadillac. It's not like in a ragtop car. It's not like a sunroof. Like I have to look out the window to find this thing.
Right.
And so I can't like constantly keep my eye on it. But every time I would look out and look for it, I would be like, oh, is, my friend would be like, is it gone? Did you stop hallucinating this thing already? And I'm like, oh, let me check. Nope, it's still there.
What the fuck? And this went on for
on for like what I felt was like half an hour.
Damn, you guys were deep out there.
Yeah.
So this thing's kind of rubber banding back, like far away, close, kind of thing.
Yes. Yes. Huh.
And it didn't shine a light on you at all. It was just something you were noticing that was just,
it was just there. It was just there, and it would appear like very close, as if it was just like, you know, like a tall street light, like right. A super tall street light.
That's pretty damn close.
Yeah, or like, I mean, like a tall street light, and this is like if it was like at the top of a tree, street right. Light. Like industrial size or whatever. The top of a crane, I guess it would be more accurate.
Okay.
But it would feel like it was following, it definitely was following us. Like it didn't seem like it was like an optical illusion or like, oh, you know, the road is turning, so therefore you don't see it kind of thing. But maybe there was an element to that. But I just remember like sometimes it seems a lot closer than the last time I saw it. And that doesn't make any sense.
So no sound, just, but you could kind of see it zipping back and forth. Like, did you actually see movement, or it was just a spatial thing?
It would appear like movement. I would stare at it being like waiting for, you know, the next country turn for it to disappear if it was stationary, but it wouldn't. It was just there, like, ominously, kind of, it just would slightly seem to like just not get out of sight, so to speak.
It's weird. It's like zoom, the gratuitous zoom in and out on you or something.
I mean, it wasn't very gratuitous. It was very like, what's the word? Like calculated. Like I'm here, but I'm just kind of like far enough away to where like, maybe they think I'm not something crazy.
So, they've done it before, man. They've done it before. Yeah. They know how to be subtle enough in the New Mexico sky to not draw too much attention. And they probably know you've been smoking a little bit. They're checking. I don't know. I don't know how much they know about what you're getting into.
What I remember specifically,
they're smart.
Was feeling that like not weird, not like this is out of the ordinary. I was like, this is very New Mexico. This is a very Taos type of experience. Like, I think a UFO is following me. And then I was like, oh, well, there are, you know, there are neighborhoods out there called the UFO huts where there's like weird little, you know, conglomerate of hippies.
Mm-hmm. I think,
you know, little hobbles or whatever. So like it felt like, oh, I was almost proud of it. It was almost like, oh, this is it. This is the thing that everybody, like the legend that everybody talks about, how like like Taos is this magical place where magical things happen. We've been blessed by one of the visitors is checking us out and curious. It just felt like the thing was very curious about us. It reminded me of like when you find a little bug and you're a little kid, and you're like, I'm gonna follow this thing to see what.
Oh, well, Mateo, you're fucking crazy. That's 10 minutes.
Thank you.
I think your hand's covering your mic.
Sorry.
Oh no, I sound like you're underwater there for a second, but I could still hear you. Hope it didn't drown out. But yeah, that's very New Mexico.
Yeah.
All right, there it is. What do you think about that? I'd be pretty weirded out. We ended up talking for a while after that about how New Mexico, about how that's kind of maybe a normal story for New Mexico, and it, not everyone, but a lot of people see things in New Mexico and experience weird things in New Mexico. And Mateo's got all these other crazy stories that are just happened to him living normal life growing up in the Albuquerque area and in the state of New Mexico. It's an interesting place, and yeah, where the weird is normal in a way. It's still very strange, but you're going to meet more folks per capita that just say, yeah, I've seen that, or I experienced that, or I know someone who's seen that or experienced that, and just brush it off, because it's not gonna, it's harder to blow their minds out there in New Mexico, because a lot of people see a lot of weird shit, and yeah, it's just part of the culture, part of the land, it seems. So I hope you enjoyed that. I'm sure Mateo will be back to tell some more tales, but that is interesting. The whole, like, I don't know, eye in the sky, kind of almost zooming in on you and pulling back and zooming in and pulling back and yeah, whatever. Weird. All right. So speaking of weird, let's get on with this talk with me and Micah. Here's me and Micah Castle. Here we go. Oh man, I gotta knock the cobwebs off. My son's been sick, so I feel like I'm slightly sick. Not really, kind of, but I got like woke up with the fucking dry, scratchy throat, and you know, I think I sound great though, so I'm fine.
Well, no, you sound good. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
Billy Crystal said, "It's better to look good than to feel good."
I believe that's true. I believe it to be true, especially while podcasting.
Absolutely.
As long as you fucking look good. Anyway.
Yep. So welcome to Silverton for you, I guess, right?
Yeah. It's been 6 weeks, a little over 6 weeks since we moved here. And you know, I've been kind of holed up the last, like, at least two out of the last 3 weeks with the sick kid. He's been sick twice in the last 3 weeks. And because of COVID, I don't get out much, and I still don't have the social, I haven't been social at all, and I just go to the store and buy stuff and come home. That's like basically, but you know, it's only been 6 weeks. That's it. So I got plenty of time.
You got so much time, and I'm hoping I can provide for you some sort of precursory information that might inform your journey a little, you know, like that's the goal, right? For me being here.
Well, I want you, yeah, I mean, however you want to go about it. This is one of the first times, I think this is only the second episode probably I've ever done where I didn't do any research. I didn't really look into it at all, because I was like, you got a lot of stories, a lot of weird stories to tell about this town and this area. And I'm just going to learn. I'm here just like a listener.
Well, so here's the deal, is like, I get in trouble for being a storyteller. Like, I don't know, you know, that band that I'm in with Sean Krogan and Mistens, we did Mike Watt's podcast earlier this summer. Mm-hmm. And Mike asked me a question. He's like, "So Mike, tell me about your earliest musical memory, man." And then I kind of went on this trip, you know, and he shut me down. He's like, "That was very Shakespearean, man. Way too long. Like, you got to shut that shit down." So he shut me down. Oh my God, dude.
Mike Watt, like, shut you down for some circumlocution.
He shut me down three times during that show. And then at the end, he's like, "But all things being said, you guys, you know, the album kicks ass. Mike, you sound really good on drums and you played bass on the record." And I go, "Yeah, man." He goes, "From another bass man to you sounded great." And I go, "Thank you." And he's like, "See, that's the kind of," you know, he's like, "That's what I want you to say. Just one, you know, two words."
Brevity. So
hopefully this can, yeah, he was, that day he was into the brevity, man. It was a bummer.
Well, but I'm here to say, talk away, my friend, because I, you know the format of this show. So you can talk, but like I said, I'm here to learn. And this is not like this is like a part of a series that I'm doing, but I did do an episode of almost a year ago about my hometown in Winchester, Virginia, with my buddy Dustin. And we just told some ghost stories, basically, because it's a Civil War town and there's a bunch of weird ghost stories. And we kind of had an episode about that. I was like, that's kind of weird to do an episode about this small, kind of seemingly random town to anyone that doesn't know shit about it. But me personally, I like the idea of learning about any weird place or person or thing, despite the fact that this is pretty self-serving considering, you know, I live in Silverton. This is kind of an introductory episode for me. Like, hey, I'm here. I'm going to do an episode about the town I live in now, but you are from here, born and raised, right?
I was actually born. Okay. So check
this out. I was going to say you were born somewhere else, but you were raised here.
No, I was born in Salem, but Salem. I was born, I was born in the hospital closest to Silverton. It was back in the day, it was called Salem General. And so check this shit out. Right as I was being born, they were wrapping filming for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That was happening.
Yeah, it was happening across the street from the hospital when I was born. And my dad always tripped out about that. He was just like, yeah, you know, and it's just kind of like that kind of set the tone in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but
foreshadowing. I mean,
well, here's the deal. Like the town you live in is like rot with amazing stories. Like a lot of small towns, but like there's some creepy shit that happens in that place, man. And like, I think a lot of it's really subsided in a lot of ways. And I don't know if it's because there was like a generational thing. You know, I watched X-Files a lot and I watched Twilight Zone. And I think there were some people doing some shit in the woods and they had their own little factions and stuff. And I don't know what they were involved in, but they definitely kind of invited some stuff. And I went down the rabbit hole these past couple of days and called on some old friends. And then I called on some of my siblings. You know, I was just like my brother and then my oldest sister, who's 14 years older than me. I said, I need to know some stuff, you know, like you got some stories. And, you know, being from a long line of storytellers, my dad wrote 2 books about Silverton, about its history and about right. the murals and all that stuff. Like, we love the town, but there's some baggage there. But my both of my siblings were like, holy shit, dude, let's go. They had some stories. And, you know, my brother sent me a YouTube link about he had a paranormal person come, you know, kind of do some footage in his place. And that was outside of Silverton and Kaiser, which is, you know, like 10, 15 miles away. But I think, you know, my brother's kind of like one of those, you know, Einstürzende Neubauten, you know, Bauhaus t-shirt, kind of dark. Like he, you know, candles everywhere. He was that kind of kid, you know, he was pretty gothy. So I think he wanted that shit in his world. So, you know, maybe he invited some of it, but, you know, he's had a lot of those run-ins through time. So I wrote some, you know, I don't do this kind of thing often with research, but I did, I'm like sitting in front of like a list of hit points of things that I wanted to talk to you about. So,
okay, well, let's get into it. Since we're just mentioning like Kaiser, which is, you know, a town that I frequent now when I need to go to maybe to another liquor store or like this word, the story that I told last week about buying the old man, the bag of liquor, that was actually in Kaiser. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just right down the road. But anyway, let's real quick for the audience. Where are we? Where is Silverton?
Silverton is located, right in the fat part of the 45th parallel. So, I mean, literally between the equator and the North Pole, Silverton gets cut right down the middle. And I'm not even bullshitting. Like if you go down South Water Street, as you're going towards Silver Falls State Park on your way out of town, you see the 45th parallel sign. And so right. like literally it's there, dude.
Yeah. And you see that sign all along throughout the area on all sorts of, country roads too. You'll see any road that crosses that 45th parallel, you see the sign. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. And you know, like I took it for granted growing up because it was just like, oh yeah, it's your backyard, you know, you're not, you know, if somebody's never seen that, you know. And we had family reunions, it was the same thing where we had reunions up at Silver Falls. We'd have family come into town on my mom's side that were all from their faction of the family ended up on the East Coast, and so they were coming from like Pittsburgh and upstate New York and stuff. And they, you know, first time they saw an old growth tree like that, you know, and all that stuff, they just were totally floored. And for me, it was like that was one of those first experiences I had of like, oh well, so I live in kind of an exceptional place, you know. You never, you don't realize it until you have an outsider or until you visit outside that place going like, whoa, yeah,
absolutely.
You know, this isn't a flyover state. This is like a pretty special area. So once I kind of recognized that, then I started kind of like paying more attention to the folklore and the haunted stories and the Sasquatch stuff and, you know, all the weird shit that goes on. But, you know, there seemed to be a pretty high concentration of it there. So yeah, I'd love to, I mean, like,
let's get we'll get into it, man.
Let's get into it. Okay.
Do you think that the 45th parallel has anything to do with it personally?
Oh, absolutely. Like, are you kidding me, man?
No, no. I was just trying to get an answer out of you.
No, I'm not angry at you. Jesus.
Calm down.
I sound, you know, anytime after 9:30 PM, I sound angry all the time. I have kids. What are you doing awake right now?
This is me time. I'm talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. What the? So yeah, no, 45th parallel. I believe that there's, you know, I've got friends that, you know, there's a couple different places in Oregon and they all, I think, pretty much correlate and coalesce with that 45th parallel, where there seems to be some sort of kind of crazy either iron deposit or something that messes with polarity of compasses and all that kind of shit. And I always thought it was kind of hokey, but it's actually kind of true. Like I've seen it and I've witnessed it, and you know, you can get kind of lost in those areas. And if you're kind of off the grid a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think 100% there's gotta be, I mean, when you think of the design of a globe shape, which I'm not a flat earther, obviously, I believe that it is a globe. there's no way that there can't be some sort of, you know, just like you look at ocean currents and how they bring certain weather patterns. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some sort of geological pattern that happens. And there's no way that kind of like the midpoint doesn't have kind of a special correlation to that. I truly believe that. So
that makes sense. And it seems like if there are any travelers from anywhere other than Earth or even on Earth, their navigation there can get scrambled. They can get a little lost. They can get a little out of sorts.
Absolutely. And I mean, the other thing too, is if they could pinpoint where they are, why wouldn't you want to hit the middle point of everything?
Right.
Like the 45th parallel is like right on the, you're in the median of all of it. And
where do you start? Downtown, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's hit that bastard right in the middle. But you know, I think that has some stuff to do with it, but I also think that, like, you know, with any concept of like manifest destiny, like you got white folks moving west, you know, as they came over and plundering and doing their bullshit along the way. And I know for a fact that's kind of stuff happened in the valley. Like, I was reading from one of the books that my dad wrote about the history of Silverton, that the valley was kind of settled, not settled, but like pioneered by this guy McKenzie, that the McKenzie River is named after.
And you're talking about the Willamette Valley, right?
Yeah, Willamette Valley, but he definitely, him and his crew definitely cruised through that area. But like Native American tribes, the Kalapuya, there was the Abaqua, which we were talking about the other day, Malala, and the Malala, they were like into like sweat lodges and stuff, and that was their form of medicine. And you know, it's just interesting the different kind of, you know, people and histories that you come upon, and then they all just kind of get decimated. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it with that decimation, I think comes some is going to come some upheaval with the metaphysical spiritual realms. I think that there's a lot of that kind of stuff there, which leads me to kind of my first thing I was going to tell you about. And this was crazy. When I talked to you the other day, I was like, oh, I got to call my buddy Steve Carver, who's like a Silverton guy. Everybody knows Steve. His parents like were bartenders at like the coolest dive bar in town. Mm-hmm. And they would tend bar at the same time, like husband and wife. It was just incredible. and they would yell at each, just fight, you know, everything. It was like, and their names were like George and Louise. I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
Like George and, you know, it was like George and it was like crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, I called him up and I was like, dude, I'm doing this podcast, and they, you know, it's great podcast, Lost Rhetoric. And it's talking about like supernatural paranormal stuff. Can you tell me some stories about Silverton? Because you're such a great storyteller. And he had told me a story that we'll get to in a minute, but he said, he was like, dude, it is so crazy that you're calling me, because another friend that I went to high school with, he's several years older than I am. This other kid named Micah, which is not a super common name, called me up and wanted to tell me this story about Salamander Island and how he had a crazy paranormal experience. And I was like, no way, dude. Like, he goes, yeah, I haven't talked to him in a couple of years. And he called me up and he goes, dude, do you remember this random memory I'm having about Salamander Island? Mm-hmm. And so Salamander Island is this area. You know where the city park is, Coolidge McLean Park.
Right.
Okay. So in that area, if you go to the Homer Davenport days or just go play in the park or whatever, if you go down to the creek and then you hike up creek quite a ways, you have to kind of navigate the creek a bit and then walk on the shore, or walk through the creek. And then you get up to a place called the locals called Salamander Island, mm-hmm. which was literally just, you know, a set of rocks, a nice little pool. There used to be kind of some stuff from an old mill that was there, I remember. But there's a million stories about crazy paranormal shit going on at that place.
Oh, okay. I've never even heard of it.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like one of those local spots, like, you know, everybody knows where the whatever in Silverton you want to talk about, the home place or whatever. But like, you know, when you get one level, or Roth's IGA or whatever, you get one level deeper and then you talk about Salamander Island, everybody's like, oh yeah, this dude knows what's up, you know? Sweet. So, yeah,
cause I'm figuring out where the post office is, and I know, I got my spots, you know. But
yeah, and there's some good spots to have as anchor points, but I think you're ready for the next level, man.
Oh, great.
I think maybe after winter's over, you can dive in deep, but you know,
sounds good to me.
Yeah. So Salamander Island is one of those spots. And I think, you know, I don't know that this story is going to play over well on podcasts, but like, there is creepy shit that goes on in there. There's like, people have spotted weird shadows. There's always the light really behaves strangely there. So I don't know where you were for the total eclipse, but I was in Silverton.
Oh, I was in Portland. Yeah.
So I was in Silverton, and I was like, cause it like blasted us. We had like a full, like 180 seconds of full. It was crazy, man. The craziest That's 3 awesome. Minutes of my life, dude. It was insane. But like, the way the light behaves during a total eclipse was very similar to how it behaves in Salamander Island, like a lot of the time. And I don't know if it's because it's in a canyon or what, but there's just some weird energy. There's a light thing that happens where kind of the hue shifts. Mm-hmm. There's something going on in there, and there's a million different people that talk about it. But I don't know that there was any kind of like ritualistic thing that I can kind of call back on, but I know that people have seen, you know, heard stuff in the bushes, or, you know, felt like they were being watched, all that kind of basic
creepy shit. What's surrounding that place? I mean, is it like a couple miles away from town or civilization, I mean, or someone's house?
No, because as you go up creek a little
it's
further,
not super desolate.
It's not super desolate, but it's just like one area of the creek where you're not encroached on by houses on either side, right? And as you get further, like on the north side of the creek, of Silver Creek, you do have houses that kind of come close to it, and they're getting closer and closer all the time. You know, they're mm-hmm. running out of land. Just, it's manifest destiny, man. It's like any place that you can build on, they're going to build on it. So that's kind of going away. But on the other side of the creek, on the south side, it's really tough to build up against it because the park butts up against it. And then on top of that, there's a huge canyon wall that you can't really develop. It's mm-hmm. just impossible. So
it can remain creepy for centuries to come.
Oh, you bet. And I guarantee it will, because I mean, I get the feeling that it's like one of those Stephen King novels, like somebody's going to try to build you know, some crazy person's gonna like, this is the perfect spot to build my dream home, and
the death start.
Yeah, exactly. Or something, you know, maybe not, let's hope not for deaths, but like something, you know, something weird, like, you know, we poured the foundation 6 months ago and the concrete won't cure.
Oh, you know. some crazy anomalies. Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Something crazy, you know, something like that. But I mean, that would be less salacious than, you know, multiple deaths, but you know, but something's going to happen. Like, I guarantee that area, somebody's going to try to do some sort of development or something, or, and it's just not going to work out. And right. I think that it's some sort of, you know, I think that there was a lot of tribal, you know, interface, you know, Native American interfacing with Caucasians that happened in that area. I heard, this is total hearsay, but I heard that there was some sort of battle on the creek. And there was one on Silver Creek, and there was one on Abiqua Creek. And that may have laid some serious ghosts behind, and probably true. I mean, there's no way that it, you know, anytime that shit happens, it leaves a mark. You know,
well,
that,
with the,
you know?
American history is, that's what it is bloodshed everywhere. there's no fucking place in this country, let alone, I mean, hardly any place in the world that is just not covered in someone's blood. So yeah, there could be ghosts literally anywhere, and they probably are. And not even to mention just, I mean, how many graves have been like built on, and, you know, just like kind of,
oh, absolutely,
exhumed, I mean, dude, against their will, and just like, you know, whatever, just destroyed.
Yeah, Seattle. That's why Seattle has so much weird juju, man. It really does. And like, Seattle has got a ton of crazy juju in it, and it's because there was so many. I keep using the word juju. There's just energy. There's weird energy shit that's happening, and it's because of the conqueror spirit that came in and just decimated whatever, you know. And we always, you know, think we've got the upper hand on culture, you know, or not, I say we, but I mean, like, the idea of expansionism, that like, hey, we're coming in with our cool ideas and our cool whatever, and, you know, paving over this, you know, it's, we just have a new lens on it for our time, you know, like, yeah, let's get rid of Lloyd Center. Let's build something else there. It's just like, it's just never ending, you know,
right.
Cycles of destruction to make something new and better. And, you know, and I think that there's times where probably history would serve us better to just leave things intact and just kind of learn to coexist. I mean, maybe we'll get there someday, but
yeah,
I think as we do that, I mean, I think we leave artifacts of energy and artifacts of bad spiritual deposits and whatever else. And I think that, like, the aliens, man, they're watching this shit. They're checking it out.
And you've had some UFO sightings in the area, right?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Like, you know, the skies, I didn't grow up in Silverton. I grew up in Victor Point, which is, I think we talked about this. You've walked up West Main, and then there's Eureka Drive. And as you go out Eureka Drive, there's like that big water tower.
Yep.
And like, and my oldest sister today told me, we can come back to this, but she said that there's some spooky shit going on at the water tower. Those were her exact words.
Really?
Yeah. She's like, there's weird, because there's a woods that surrounds that. And people used to climb that water tower back in the day and like spray paint. You know, my sister's name was like spray painted by her boyfriend.
No. Yeah, oh, so it was something good. Like, he loved her.
It was like, you know, it was like Terra 81, you know. Was my sister's name and her graduating class. So of course it was like, you know, it was very like Americana, you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High kind of shit or whatever. But that's cool. Like, that's neat. But like, I, you know, who knows if like a kid fell off of it or something. Oh man. And
yeah, that, it's a big ass water tower. We were looking, not seriously, but there's a house literally right there on the corner that we were looking at that was for sale right before we got this house. And that's a nice little neighborhood, but it is like the gateway to the country. It's like you just go down that street about a fucking half mile and then boom, you basically, it feels like in the middle of nowhere.
So yeah, I lived 3 miles past the corner you're talking about.
Okay. So you're
towards
you're,
the country.
You're in the country, legit.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Yeah. Okay. So you got open skies as much as you can in the Pacific Northwest, I assume.
Absolutely. And yeah, like, I mean, I'm not going to go back too far, but my dad actually fell in love with the skies down there. He was a photographer. So like he studied with Ansel Adams and stuff after he was a photographer in the Air Force. And he got to go hang out with Ansel Adams and stuff. You know, he's just, that's he was amazing. A brilliant guy. Yeah.
And super what, cool. What was your old man's name?
Larry, L-A-R-R-Y, Castle, K-A-S-S-E-L-L. And you can kind of, I mean, he left a little bit of some internet stuff.
He left an imprint him. On this town.
Absolutely. He did some, he did several murals. He was part of the Mural Society. He was a painter, graphic designer. He designed this, I don't know if they even use it anymore. I've been trying to kind of bring it back, but he designed the Silverton Fox, the mascot. Like there's one where the fox is leaning on the S looking all cool.
Oh man, I see that all the time. I think they still use that.
Yeah, I think they use a combination between that one and like the weird like flexing fox where his teeth are showing, and I think it looks really goofy and kind of like a Joe Rogan style kind of logo.
Cartoony, like a little too cartoony. Yeah.
My dad had some personality. His was like, it's cartoony, but it's also like kind of badass. It's just like this fox leaning on an S, like check me out, you know?
Right.
But he was a great, you know, designer, illustrator, and all that stuff. And he loved that town. So anything he did for the town or for the Mural Society or for whatever, he put his heart into it. But so check this out. He bought a house out there that wasn't a house. He bought a schoolhouse in 1970 and tore it down basically to nothing and then built a house on top of the foundation. So I grew up in what was a renovated schoolhouse.
Wow. And,
you know, those creepy old schoolhouses out in the valley, you know, it's just like anywhere else in the country where it's just like you're kind of in the country, you know, it's a schoolhouse.
Old schoolhouses are creepy. Like I can't. Yeah. And I can't remember exactly where this story comes from, but I remember telling the story on the show where there was a moment where this tourist was looking in this old schoolhouse. It might've been in like the Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts or something.
Okay, and cool.
There was a class of children being taught by a woman, and the teacher noticed the tourist looking in to her classroom. And this is like, this was like turn of the century. Like these people were dressed not of the time. And this woman was basically looking into the past, and the teacher was looking into the future. And like, she came to the window, like, what the fuck are you doing looking in my class? And then it like disappeared, but she somehow timed it to look into this classroom. And they recognized each other, like the ghost recognized her. And it was just like, what the fuck?
Oh, that's heavy shit.
And that's the kind of shit I think about when I pass old schoolhouses and shit, you know, because it's kind of weird.
Like literally when I was growing up, you could go in the backyard and you could find the concrete, early form built concrete footings for the outhouses. Mm-hmm. That they had at the schoolhouse. So it was like kind of like for around here, it was pretty old school. You're like, oh, whoa, like this is not from our time, as you were saying. But there was a lot of back there where I grew up, it was like a 3-acre lot that my dad bought that the school was on. And there was, you know, like I said, those weird footings and stuff. And then he had built a little outbuilding in the back. But the craziest thing was there's these giant boulders that I found out later from another Silverton friend of mine who's a geologist, this guy Norm, he said they're Missoula flood deposit. So they're these giant igneous rocks that have kind of cliff faces on them. They're like 20 feet tall. Wow. But we'd always go hang out at these rocks, you know, and when we were young, it was like you'd go back there and, you know, listen to tapes on your little boom box, or you'd, you know, when I got old enough to get into it, I would go back there and smoke pot or whatever. But there was like just a creepy energy back in those backwoods. There was like a 6-acre wood back there, and you'd see kind of weird stuff and, you know, some sort of stuff, but like, I guess quickly about paranormal stuff is my sister told me this story. She goes, do you remember the puppy? I go, what are you talking about? And she said that she and my sisters and I was like a baby, and they used to, you know, my sisters are all older than me, and so is my brother. I'm the youngest of six. And so they would cart me around in this baby backpack. And my sister swears that she was like, I don't know if all the sisters remember it the same way, but we were wandering around. We heard a puppy kind of whining, and we happened upon it, and it had a nail stuck in its chin, and it went through to its snout. And I was like, I do remember this story. And she said, yeah, it just seemed very ritualistic and weird. And then I told her this story that, like, literally, like a bunch of years later, I was wandering in those woods and I found a cat that had a missing paw. It was like still like bloody stump, missing paw cat. Mm-hmm. And they swear that my sisters and my brother, my brother is like I said, he's a dark dude. He swears that there was some ritualistic shit going on back in those woods, like with somebody that, you know, like some kind of that Blair Witch stuff or whatever. But like, anytime you bring animals into that jam, I block it out of my memories, because I just think it's like so disturbing, and you've got to be next level messed up to be into that kind of shit. So,
and this is probably when you were a little, I don't know, maybe teenager or early like preteens or something. This is probably, or even when you were a little younger, this is like Satanic Panic style.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely had that, like, oh, these kids are doing, you know, they're doing
devil worshiping, going back in the woods.
Yeah, the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, you know, like some of that fucking multi-sided die shit, you know,
they're,
like
they're playing D&D and listening to Dio.
Yeah, exactly. Like a rainbow in the dark. It's just, yeah, like, yeah, there was a lot of that panic. Then I remember when it really took hold of my household, because my mom was like kind of hyper Christian. I mean, she still is, which good honor for, you know, sticking with something for a while, which that's, you know, in our culture in this day and age, you know, to stick with something for that long, that's pretty cool.
yeah. Yeah. True.
But yeah, like, I guess it was, but there was some energy back there. I don't know. I remember the cat thing being really creepy, but there was really bad, weird energy sometimes. But there was definitely 100%, the skies were so big once you got out of the thicket, because that's where all those grass seed fields are, you know, where you have like groves of trees, like where I grew up, but then you'd have huge expanses of grass fields or Christmas tree farms, so you can see the whole sky. Mm-hmm. And dude, no, I mean, more than I can count on, you know, I can count on two hands probably the amount of times that I saw something that was like 100% an unidentified flying object, like through like the steady lens of what are we talking about here. It was completely unidentified. It was absolutely flying, and it was 100% an object. So like, there you go. What's the best one?
What was the craziest one?
I think the craziest one was the one that followed me from my grandparents' house. They lived like 15 miles away, towards Salem. They lived in a little area called McClay. And then as you're coming back from McClay, you go through Waldo Hills and Victor Point, which were these, they're not even things. They're just kind of like, you know, some sort of waypost. Mm-hmm. It's like a spot on the map.
Right.
But I remember leaving my mom for the first time I ever got a cool car. My dad bought her this, like he bought her like an import car, like a used Fiat. And she was so excited about it. And it had a sunroof. And it was summertime and we were coming back from my grandparents' place. And I've always been fascinated with airplanes. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the skies were so big down there. You could mm-hmm. just see everything.
Right.
And from Salem, they did a lot of like National Guard helicopter stuff, and you know, C-130s doing refueling loops above our house and stuff, and planes coming in for their landing approach to PDX would start kind of descending over where I lived, you know. And I paid attention to that stuff. I just loved it. I was just, you know, because you're in the country, it's like, what else are you going to look at? So you look at the skies and you look at the woods, and that's what you check out. So, I was coming back from my grandparents' place, and I swear to God, looking at my mom's moonroof, I saw this kind of beacon of light above the car. And I was like, well, wait a minute. I'm old enough to know. I was probably eight or nine. Well, there's no flashing anything on this thing. So it's like, it's not like an airplane always has those flashing beacons left and right, starboard, port side. And it didn't have any of that. It was just like this kind of oddly, kind of iridescent blue light. And it was above us. And I was like, well, it's like a star. But as we drove, it like literally stayed right above the car. And it looked like it was maybe at like 10,000 feet or maybe 5,000. And it just stayed above the car. And even as we made turns onto, you know, those country roads, you're cutting on property lines. So you're making 90 degree turns everywhere. And it just followed us. And literally my mom was talking to me, and she's like, you know, I had my seat reclined and I was looking up, and then it, like, as we pulled up onto the road that I live on, which is a gravel road, we slowed down and that thing slowed down too. And then we got to where we pull off the road to our driveway, and we pulled in, and I got out of the car and I just sat out there and I looked at it and I go, Mom, look at that. And she looked at it with me, and she even kind of got a little spooked out by it. And then, you know, like they say, like, all these recent pilots and everything else say, it just kind of stationary, just hung out there, single light, no flashing, no rotation, no nothing, just sat there. And then it just, boom, flew off. It went like northeast. It probably, there was no sonic boom. There was no nothing. It just like was boom, gone. And we were like, holy shit, what the hell happened there? And we kind of talked about it later. And I was like, Mom, what do you think that was? And she's like, well, I don't know, shooting star, blah, blah, blah. But it was not. I am, you know, my whole life I've been obsessed with kind of air, you know, the things happening in the air, because it's such an anomalous place for things to happen. You know, we still have not conquered, you know, traveling on land. So anything that's happening in the sky, you're like, whoa, that's kind of wild. Even to think about our actual terrestrial design human airplane that's flying through the air, you're talking about a giant piece of metal squirting out, you know, burned fuel behind it to go. Like, that's crazy. So like, when you really start thinking about stuff coming here from other planets, it's first of all, to me, it doesn't seem surprising. It's just like, of course there's somebody checking us out, like looking at what we're doing and kind of wondering what we're up to. And and maybe they even, you know, had a hand in creating what we're doing and kind of like setting us up for this whole experiment, and they're just coming to check in on the experiment. Who knows? But
or they were just like, is that a fucking Fiat? That's a fucking exactly. Fiat. Hey, follow this.
Hey, what's a Fiat doing out here? That doesn't make any sense.
I've never seen one of these out here.
Yeah, this is pickup country. What's a Fiat with a sunroof doing out here?
Well, that's pretty wild. So it followed you for miles then. See, that's pretty crazy.
I listened to this podcast, and I listened to Spitz episode. Okay. And I was like, I totally was enthralled with his stories about Southern California and having family that all kind of had repetitive experiences.
The whole leech family, apparently.
Right.
Experiences some crazy stuff.
Well, that trips me out, because I think that I'm kind of the beacon of light in our family, that it seems to be like every time I mention UFOs to my family, they're like, yeah, whatever. But it's funny because they'll all be like, yeah, UFOs my ass. But then the other ones are like, dude, what about that ghost? And oh, what about that dude, that crazy guy, you know, or the shadow of the, you know, whatever. They love that kind of stuff. But
not aliens.
No, that's a bridge too far for them. I'm the only one, man. I don't know.
Oh, I gotta ask real quick before I forget. So what happened with that fucking cat that was missing a paw? What did you do with that thing?
So here's the thing, is like, I was like, holy shit. And I was with, I asked my brother, I go, were you with me when that happened? He goes, no. He goes, but I heard about the dog from the sisters. They all said, yes, there was this dog with a nail going through its chin. And like, and I was just like, God, that just sounds so fucking brutal and awful. I don't want to remember something like that. And I said, but were you with me with the cat? And he goes, no, I wasn't there, but you told me about it. And you said you were with your buddy. So I called my buddy and I said, do you remember that? And he's like, I remember it. But what we did was we went to go get your mom and kind of ask her, like, we were probably 8 years old. Like, what are we supposed to do, mom? Right. Like, and then we went back out to find this thing and it was gone. And I talked to my mom and I was like, it's gone. And she goes, it's probably for the better. It's probably, right. It probably got eaten up by another animal and, you know, it was going to suffer anyway. And I was like, yeah, but like, but unresolved. And here I am talking about it, you know, 35 years later. I don't know. It, just creepy shit like that does happen in the country. Like, there's a lot of feral animals and stuff. But like, I feel like I was, you know, everybody who says that, I've got friends that grew up in Manhattan or grew up in the Bronx or whatever. And they're like, yeah, some really crazy shit happened on the streets. And I would, and then I would, you know, like listen to these stories. And then I would kind of relay some of the stories about growing up that were kind of like that, you know, or like, you know, yeah, this kid was, you know, he was working on a farm and there was a, you know, an accident where he fell off a tractor and his, you know, leg got mauled by a, you know, a farm implement or something. And, you know, and they're like, holy shit, that sounds insane. So I think it's just, it's all about, you know,
crazy what shit your happens everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. What your measure of crazy is and where, and the lens that you see it through and how frequently or infrequently, you know, it's just, it's all completely, you know, we all suffer trauma constantly. And it's just like, when you explain your trauma to somebody else and you're like, holy shit, that's crazy. And then to other people, they're just like, ah, whatever, you know, like, right. You know, I don't know. It's just, it's so scalable.
Yeah. You're like, you think that's trauma? Well, let me tell you about this. And you're like, well, you can't gauge someone else's trauma. Trauma's trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me tell you about Salamander Island, bro. You know.
Right. So, what other weird shit you got? What do you got in the queue?
Oh. Okay. So, I mean, I could go back to the UFO thing. There were several times I grew up with a south facing window in my bedroom. And it was a huge window.
Our house here. It's south facing. Well, yeah, the front of the house is south facing. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the summertime, keep your eyes peeled. Cause I remember as a kid, you know, I thought it was a lightning storm or something that would wake me up and there would be anomalous lights that would, like it would illuminate the whole sky, but there would be no clouds. And I was like, what in the fuck? It was like, you know, it was like somebody had a you know, a Canon camera flash that did the whole friggin' sky and it would just pulse once and then
just
be gone.
Once. Well, where I grew up in Virginia, obviously there's heat lightning and that is amazing, but you know exactly what it is because the weather is determining, you know, a fucking storm's coming, you know what's happening, and it happens all the fucking time. But if I were where we are and it happened just once,
like, yeah,
or it pulsed just once, like there's no inclement weather coming or whatever, that's pretty strange.
There's that. And then I remember hearing like you know, because I, like I said, I'm like a fan of airplanes and helicopters and you know, like I said, anything that flies through the sky, I'm fascinated to connect, you know, being a musician, I love the sounds that are connected to vision, right? Like I make, you know, inextricable links between those two things. You know, you see something and you want to hear it. So there were times where I would see stuff, I would hear like a noise, but it was not like a typical jet aircraft or propeller aircraft or a helicopter with a rotor blade or anything. It was literally just like a zoom. And then I'd look out and I'd see a darting light and that was it. And it was just gone. And before you could identify it or before you could even connect with what it was, it would be gone. And that happened several times when I was growing up. And, you know, and I don't know, you know, what it was. And I would ask my friends, did you see that? And because I had friends that lived, you know, on the same gravel road that I did, you know, a mile away. And sometimes there would be confirmations and sometimes there wouldn't be. And you would just kind of be like, all right, this is part of living in the country is, you know, weird stuff that you just kind of, you experience. And either you, you know, either people are like, yep, I remember that. Or yeah, I saw that. Or there's the you're crazies. So it's kind of, you know, you just never know how, you know, it's like with anywhere, it's just, you know,
right.
I don't even, it's just that thing.
Right. Right. So who are the crazies to you? Who are the good crazies that what's a wild story from someone else that you know about?
Oh, let me look through my, okay. I will use, first names only in this story. So this one time I was hanging out with a friend, we were skiing up on Hood. This was by the time I was in college. So like, you know, late teens, and he had this really amazing pickup and I was like, yo, Steve, where'd you get this thing? He's like, oh, I can't really discuss where I got this pickup. And I kind of was like, all right, cool. And this is like mid-90s when X-Files was a thing, you know, like,
right.
I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. You just got this pickup out of nowhere. And he's like, no, dude, you know, kind of like my dad got a grant to hunt Sasquatch. And so he bought two brand new pickups and a bunch of these high powered 50 millimeter Desert Eagle rifles or whatever, because we're gonna go hunting Sasquatch and
try to kill Sasquatch.
Yeah, I was like, give me a break, dude, that's not even real. No, but it, like, I have checked around with probably 10 of my friends that I highly respect and highly regard their you know, acuity in this world and their level of truth. And they're all like, yep, it totally happened, man.
What?
And I go, but were they full of shit? And like, you know, did they go out and actually hunt the thing? When you get a grant like that, like of, you know, the rumor was it was $150,000, which in, you know, the mid 90s, that was a chunk of cash, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was like, did they actually, what was the result? Like, what was the metric that the grantor was expecting? Like, mm-hmm. How did they prove or disprove, or like, what was the deliverable on this gig? You know? So nobody could really answer that, but apparently they went out and they were like diligently hunting and felt like they had some leads. And there's several people that swear in Silverton and up, there's actually a trail at Silver Falls. I think I was telling you this. I think I was wandering through News Seasons and having a kind of preliminary call with you. But like, if you take the regular trail through Silver Falls State Park, mm-hmm. It's like a 7-mile loop, but there's like this little cutoff where if you're like, you know, Bat Cave special and you're like a local, you know, and you know, the secret handshake or whatever, somebody can tell you where the Sasquatch trail is, and it's like another loop that takes you outside the park, and there's some kind of sketchy, and I've actually done the trail, and there's some like real sketchy, you know, kind of like handmade rope areas that you kind of have to navigate and do some scaling and stuff, and it's not easy. Mm-hmm. But they named it Sasquatch Trail because several people swear that there's a den out there that is an abandoned Sasquatch den.
Oh shit.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, you know, down there, it's not uncommon to hear that.
Well, that, like, yeah. Oh, there's, Pacific, you know, Northwest style. It's kind of everywhere from BC all the way down here.
I mean, I can verify that I have seen, you know, mountain lion down there, and I have seen, you know, black bear. I've seen wild turkey. I've seen any number of different things.
That's scary enough. I don't want to see a mountain lion at all, but you know.
No, they're out there. And they're, you know, they're being caught more and more frequently on game cameras because mm-hmm. we're encroaching. I mean, we're like, oh, literally, yeah.
The attacks seem to be up. The encounters seem to be up. It's scary. They're getting a little more brazen, it seems, like just straight up
Who, the humans? Yeah.
No, absolutely. No. Well, yeah, the humans. Yeah, but the mountain lions too are just like, you know, they're rolling up on people's property and just not really acting scary.
Yeah.
I think they're acclimating. Yeah. They're just like, oh, well, you know.
Well, I mean, free food, dude. Like, exactly, what are you gonna do? Like,
exactly.
Come on down, like.
Yeah, yeah.
The smorgasbord is a lot easier than going hunting down a deer. I mean, geez.
So there's, I forget the name of it because I've never been, but there's a restaurant down on the, what is it, the 213 on the way to the Silver Falls State Park, where they sell the Sasquatch burger.
You bet. Yeah. Up at Drake's Crossing. I took my kids there. Absolutely.
So I think I mentioned this on a show a few weeks ago. And I think I saw the place was for sale. They're like, we're selling the place, the recipes and everything, like to buy the whole fucking place and keep it basically what it is. But I am curious, is a Sasquatch burger intended to be made from Sasquatch? Or is it just a massive burger?
It's a marketing ploy.
Do they say they try to say it's Sasquatch meat? Because that's kind of cute. It's kind of cute.
It is kind of cute. So this proves what a like small town doofus I am at heart. Is I just kind of ordered it. I went up there and ordered one just and didn't even ask the backstory. I was just like, hey, I'll have a Sasquatch burger, because it was just kind of like, yeah. It's kind of like the home place, the pizza place in town that I grew up loving so much has a pizza called the Barn Burner, and nobody knows why it's called a Barn Burner. You just say, can I have a Barn Burner? Mm-hmm. You know, you're handed these things. And when I walked into that place, cause that place was not always what it didn't serve. When I was growing up, it didn't serve Sasquatch burgers. It was like a gas station with one pump, and mm-hmm. it had like, and that was the place you stopped on your way to Silver Falls to grab, you know, back before people drank water out of Nalgene bottles or mm-hmm. whatever. I mean, you stopped in there to get, you know, four bottles of Coke and a,
right.
And dad needs a six pack of, you know, Olympia beer or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah.
That was the spot for that. Mm-hmm. But the people who bought it, it seemed like they did some cool stuff. Like I wandered in there. I was buying a holiday tree for my kids a couple of years ago, and we went up there and it was a cool experience. It was very like homey and small town and had the vibe. I did not ask if the Sasquatch burger was made from real Sasquatch meat.
Well, just think about it. If your friend, the one who got the grant to kill the Sasquatch for the Sasquatch burgers.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
And it's just,
honestly, if I had real Sasquatch meat, you know, I would call Tom Colicchio and the Top Chef people and be like, listen, I will serve you Sasquatch meat, but you're going to pay $600 a burger. And it's not because I'm a capitalist. It's just because I want to see the reaction on their face.
How fucking crazy would it be if this little restaurant in Silverton, Oregon, is out in the open basically saying, yeah, we're hunting Sasquatch and serving Sasquatch burgers, but no one believes it. And they got the total, they know where the den is, and they're just out there slaughtering Sasquatch, feeding it to the public and making it look kind of cute and kitschy, but they're literally killing Sasquatch and don't give a fuck about research,
right,
or anything. It's I got burgers to serve.
Oh my God, this would be the best. It's like so good. The screenplay, I mean, like, come on. It's so good.
We can't let the secret out, or we're not going to be able to sell our Sasquatch burgers. We can't let them know that it's actually real. Just let them think it's just a big burger.
Yeah, and of course, there have to be, like, these kind of, like, peripheral characters who are always like, well, I mean, it was really good, but I just wish they would have paired it with, I mean, they put that cilantro on the side, that kind of, like, chimichurri, and I don't think that was the right sauce for it. You know, it's like, wait a minute, you're overlooking the fact that they were serving you Sasquatch meat, you know?
Yeah, I just want Sasquatch on a stick. I want to try it that way. Like, no, that would spice. Be, I want to see what that tastes like.
Yeah, I think unfettered Sasquatch might be a really, I mean, I'm guessing it would be very gamey.
That'd be pretty gamey. I'm gonna have to go talk to him. Like, can we just get Sasquatch on a stick?
Yeah, I mean, before they sell the place, absolutely, you should go up there and be like, hey, listen, as a parting salvo, I don't know you guys, I don't know anything about this place, but could you please give me just Sasquatch on a stick?
That's it.
I'm sure that they would be very amenable to the your plea. I'm sure.
I would hope so.
I think they hope so. Yeah, you know, people in Drake's Crossing find that kind of thing charming, I'm sure. And literally, as a local, that little area, if you go there in the dark, dude, there's a church up there that has like a red cross that lights up. It's like a neon red cross that lights up at night. It's pretty fucking spooky when it's really foggy. Mm. So just so you know,
I haven't noticed. There's a church like two blocks away from my house that has a on their little, you know, steeple or whatever. The night we moved in, me and my bandmates were like, even one of them called it out. I was like, what the fuck is that? Because it looks like it's not religious. It kind of looks like in the night sky, it actually looks kind of really fucking cool. And like it's like a monolith of some kind, but not like a Christian monolith. Because honestly, the cross part of is kind of small and it's lit really cool. And
well, you live close to St. Paul's Catholic Church, which is I'm pretty sure you do.
I don't even know.
Yeah, because it's kind of by the wooden nickel, right? Mm-hmm. And if to listeners, like you know the church by the wooden nickel.
Yeah, you'll never know. You'll never
know. Go to Silverton, check it out. Have a burger at the wooden nickel. It's not Sasquatch meat, but it's totally good. And then play some video poker and then go to the Catholic church and then go to Jason's house.
Just stop by my house and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Maybe I got some Sasquatch meat in the freezer. I don't know.
Well, actually it's so funny. The first time I heard end to end, A side to B side of Kick Out the Jams by the MC5 was on at my friend's house on Pine Street right by you. So
That was a
formative experience. I was like 12 years old.
Kick out the jams, motherfucker. See, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I like to know that there's, you know, everywhere I go, there's weirdos. So.
Yeah. And you know. When I opened up for Wayne Kramer a long time ago, and Freddie Trujillo, who we both know was there.
Yeah. He's been on the show.
Freddie. Yeah, I'm sure. Talking about hawks and crazy shit.
Yep.
He's my dude, longtime friend of mine.
Me too. We were in a band together, me and Freddie.
What?
Yeah, man.
Get the fuck out of here. Really? How come I didn't know this?
I don't know. You gotta talk to Freddie. I blame him.
No, I don't blame him for anything. He's a busy guy too.
Yeah,
one thing Freddie does not need in this world is blame, because that's true. He's a blameless soul.
I'll at least blame him for this one discretion where he didn't tell you that we were in a band together.
Well, he hung out with me in Silverton many, many, many times back in the mid late 90s, and he had an affinity for that little town. We had some good times down there.
Great.
But I don't know. I'm bummed that I don't have any like paranormal stories with Freddie involved in Silverton, which it seems that would be so fitting. Holy shit.
Right.
I might have to take him down there again and get something happening.
Yeah. There's nothing but time. There's something that I've noticed about this town. Cause my wife went and bought that, like the Images of America books where it's like all, the sepia tone covers and stuff. She bought one the other day of Silverton and just whatever, just to have, gift shop style.
And
there's fires. And I think this is just a common theme throughout the history of the world and the way things were built and whatever, but big fires seem to be a thing that happened around here. And when we moved, right before we moved in, there was the massive Mount Angel fire just down the road from our house on the corner. Yeah. That just happened. But I don't know if there's a history of anyone dying in any of these fires, but buildings burning to the fucking ground in this town and in the surrounding areas is a thing.
Yeah. There was a whole spate in the late 90s of like church burnings. And I watched, so this is a crazy
story. In this area, in Marion County?
Oh, you bet, man. Wow. There was a night where some guy started fires on three churches in Silverton. And holy one of them,
shit.
Yeah, it was like the Emmanuel Lutheran Church. It was on top of the hill by the Circle K as you're going out towards Malala.
Right.
It was that big church. They used to have a huge ass steeple on it. And so me and a bunch of friends did some mushrooms. I don't know if anybody else were doing mushrooms that night, but I think we were all really stoned and kind of we were flirting with all sorts of different mind altering things just to kind of like cope. And so we were out and okay. So this guy who's one of my best friends still this day, we were out in the country somewhere and he jumped over a guardrail and slid down an embankment that he didn't know was there because we thought that cops were somewhere close by chasing us. So he jumps over and he breaks his ankle. Ooh. And like, I have to help him out of there. And he didn't just break it, he snapped it. Like he had to have like pins put in.
Ooh.
And so we throw him in the car and he's like moaning in pain. And we drive into town and there's a giant fire on top of the hill and it's like the church is burning down. And then we take him to the hospital and one of my other good friend's mom is the intake nurse. Of course, it's a small town, like, mm-hmm. And she's like, well, what have you boys been doing tonight? And I'm like, nothing.
Just high as shit.
I'm not on mushrooms right now, I'm good, check me out. And she's like, Micah, I know your mother's phone number, tell me what's going on. And I go, nothing. And she's like, well, you know that there's a church burning down. And I'm like looking at her and I'm like, and I'm so high that I'm like going like, she thinks I lit the church on fire.
Right.
And she thinks I broke my friend's ankle.
This running is away. Oh no. Fucked. This is like, yeah, bad, I'm like, timing. This is bad timing.
So yeah,
you look guilty as hell.
Yeah, it looked bad. So, but then we went out and we were just like, we're such bad friends. We're like, so how long do you think he's going to be in the ER? And the nurse was like, yeah, he's going to be here for a while. Like he totally snapped his leg. And we're like, well, we're going to go watch the church burn down. We'll be back in a while to pick him up, you know, which we did. And we watched that church burn down. And it turns out there was an arsonist who set two other churches on fire that night. And
wow,
that was one of those nights that I swear there was some sort of energy field that, you know, maybe that's part of that 45th parallel thing. I don't know what. But something took that town over and it was just like the energy was just like everywhere you looked, you know, it was that just bipolarity, man. Yeah, man. When you're right in the middle, shit can tugging get crazy, dude. Yeah. Just
tugging your brain in half.
Yeah. Well, I was going to tell. Okay. But one other story I got to tell you is going out past that water tower. My oldest sister bought a house there up that road a ways, up Eureka, as it turns into Victor Point Road. She had a big place with property. And she was telling me, because I called her up and I was like, I'm doing this podcast. You got to tell me some stories. And she reminded me of Dark Suit Man.
Uh-oh. I like it already.
Yeah. Okay. This is going to be... See, this is one I'm not privy to, but I can probably relate to it. I think I probably have had Dark Suit Man encounters, but apparently my nephew, her son, and then her daughter, and they are like in their mid 30s now. So not much younger than me, but they swear that on that road, they saw an old man walking up and down the road that they called Dark Suit Man. And he wore a fedora. I mean, he probably looked a lot like Sean Krogan. No offense, Sean. but they said he would walk up just and down the road.
Old Road Krogan, you know?
Yeah, Old Road Krogan. and they would say that they would try to talk to him and he wouldn't talk back. And then he would walk up the road and they would turn around and they'd look back at old man, you know, Dark Suit Man, and he would be gone, you know, like, but, and that wasn't the trippiest part. So like, yeah, Dark Suit Man, I probably encountered Dark Suit Man, which there was nobody out there at that point in time in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s that would wear a dark suit walking around there with a fedora. It just wasn't possible. It would be more likely somebody had Carhartts and boots on.
Right. It's a ghost from decades past.
Yes.
Reliving some terrible incident.
Well, so yeah, but that the only place where it gets really trippy and weird is that she said, yeah, well, we had a family get together over Thanksgiving that I didn't go to. I don't know why, because I'm too scared of that town, man. I'm too scared of the crazy shit going on. But I didn't go. But apparently my niece and nephew were talking about it. And then another niece who's part of a different part of the family totally was like, oh, Dark Suit Man, I used to see him all the time too. And he was totally not real. He was a ghost, you guys. And then she went in this whole bit about it's the ghost of this person who lived on the same road as us. His name was Old Man Small. And Old Man Small died in like 1983 or 84. And I can send you a picture of Old Man Small's house that's still standing to this day, but it has no windows in it. It's like a white farmhouse. But everybody swears that that Old Man Small haunts that whole part of past the water tower by about a mile. He walks up and down that road for like 4 or 5 miles.
No shit. And I've
had it corroborated now by like 4 or 5 people because I mentioned it to somebody else besides my nieces and nephews. They're like, yeah, dude, suit guy, he's out there. He just walks up and down the road and you try to talk to him and he just pretends you're not even there. It's because, you know, probably because you're not there to him.
Yeah, he doesn't know you're there. Man, yeah. Okay, so now I got the rest of my life to try to see this fucking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
go to Salamander Island. Go check that out.
Yeah, do a camping trip. Do
Dark Suit Man, and then Sasquatch Burger. We got some hits. We got some hits here.
The fucking Dark Suit Man. I mean, there are a lot of stories of, like weird hitchhikers on country roads all across the world, probably, but definitely in America.
Oh yeah,
that where this seems, the creepy apparition walking down the dark road, I love that this town has that story.
I've got another one, one that my other sister says too. I floated this one past you the other day, but this is another one that I've told people like, oh yeah, my sister told me this one. And they're like, yeah. And you're saying this didn't happen because it totally did.
Mm-hmm.
But she swears. Okay. So as you go out from Silverton towards Malala on Highway 213, there's that little turnoff to Scott's Mills. You got to check out Scott's Mills.
Oh, man. I've been to Scott's Mills a few times. I've been to the park there. I've hung out. Me and my son have walked all around that little town. We actually looked at a house pretty seriously in Scott's Mills.
Yeah, my friend Dusty is kind of like on the little civic committee, and it's a cool little place, but there's some weird shit that happens there.
I bet.
There's a whole family. I'm not going to use names, but there's a whole family of little people that live up there. Like little people,
right?
Like, and they're super rad, and they're the funniest.
Isn't Mill City close, and isn't Mill City a lot of little people live in Mill City? Am I wrong about this,
dude? I don't know about Mill City. I know that there's like a reality show about a bunch of little people that live out by Hillsboro.
Yeah, I've worked there and I've worked on that farm, and I've got friends that worked on that show for years, and I've met them. That's not exactly what I'm talking about, but I also have a friend who worked on a movie in, I believe, Mill City. And he told me that there's a pretty large little person population out there.
Absolutely. I'm sure there is.
Not Scott's Mills, but Mill City, I believe, is the name of the town.
And as the crow flies, they're not that far apart. It's just that there's no real roads that connect it, except for this is where we go on to my next thing. Crooked Finger Road kind of connects those areas.
Okay.
And Crooked Finger Road is great the name. One that, great I know name. It's one of the best ever. My friend actually owns a record label that does small imprints stuff called Crooked Finger Records, which I think Crooked Finger is just such a great.
I love it.
You know, it's one of the best. It's
I got crooked fingers. I don't so.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't speak for your fingers, but
I can. some of them are crooked.
Well, yeah, I had one that got chopped up in a muscle car back in the 90s that's a little crooked, but it's healed up nicely. It was sewn up by a doctor in Silverton.
There you go.
Dr. Lord, if you can believe it. Last name Lord, L-O-R-D.
Wow. What was Dr. Lord doing at the hospital when your friend broke his ankle when the church was burning? I bet Dr. Lord was having a fucking just a complex, like a huge
dilemma. Well, he was actually the attending emergency room physician. So he would have been there that night to pin up my dude's
doctor. So Dr. Lord fixed your friend's broken ankle while the church was burning. Probably.
Yes. So
probably.
Yes. Start the rock opera writing process now.
This is amazing. I love it.
Yeah, dude, Silverton, what are you gonna do? It's like
I don't know.
Start your band called Steel Hammer, like the street, and then write this rock opera. Let's go.
Oh man. Well, as soon as we get off the phone here.
I don't have to play full drum kit on the thing, but if I could just play like concert toms on you know what I mean? Like some
we'll of those just we'll just do it street Stray Cat style.
That'd be fun. That might be fun. shit, where were we? What were we talking about? Oh, no, my sister, Crooked Finger Road.
Right.
Yeah, okay, Crooked Finger Road. My sister swears that she was driving out with her boyfriend who had a motorcycle on Crooked Finger Road, and they almost got into a wreck because they rounded a corner, and she swears there was a guy that, I don't know if you know any of the 80s wrestlers, but she swears there's a guy that looked like Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, yeah, of course. He's come up on the show before.
Oh, not surprising.
Recently cancer-free. Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
That's good news.
Recently.
That's good news.
Very recently cancer-free. Congratulations,
Hacksaw. Oh, my God, that's Hacksaw. Good, yeah.
Or our 2x4 Jim Duggan, as Matt Whitman calls him.
Well, yeah, I mean, thumbs up, baby. So my sister swears that she rounded a corner and there was a guy and they almost got in a wreck and had to like lay the bike down almost and like, you know, skidded into a stop. And there was a guy standing in the middle of the road that looked like Hacksaw Jim Duggan swinging a dead possum over his head.
Mm.
And I said,
it's not Dark Suit Man.
No, it's Dead Possum Man. Different guy. Same area, different dude. They could be related. I don't know. But like, yeah, swinging a dead possum over his head. And I kind of was like telling her, I was like, you must have been high, because she was kind of one of the stonier of my sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, we were like stone cold sober. We were just going out for a motorcycle ride on Crooked Finger. God, this all sounds like a fucking rock opera. Like, we were on a motorcycle ride on Crooked Finger and we saw Possum Man swinging it, you know, like, it's just too much.
Well, it could have been Billy Jack Haynes, who's from Oregon City.
Yeah, well, you know, Rowdy Roddy Piper, too. He could have been out there. That's
true. I mean, but shit, Oregon City's just down the road.
Just down the road a pace. Just a pace.
Just a little bit. It could have been Billy Jack.
Yeah,
high as a kite.
Swinging possum, that dead possum. Well, I mean, the thing was that I said, are you sure the possum, you know, being that I am who I am, I said, are you sure the possum was dead?
Oh,
and she said yes, she was very sure that it was dead. But
it was alive when they started swinging it.
Yes. Yeah, and just
didn't even smash it, just death by dizziness or
death by dizziness at the 45th parallel, man.
Or it could have just been playing possum. We don't know.
Yeah. You got me on that one. Absolutely. Well played. Oof. That was a birdie putt from 40 feet. Holy shit. Good one. So Yeah. So that, but then I was like to my friends, I kept saying to all my other friends, I go, man, you know, my sister tells this story about the this dude swinging a possum over his head, and you know, da 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 da. And my one of my other friends was like, yeah, I've seen that dude before, and it was kind of like,
okay, you know, okay. So he has seen the dude.
Yes,
swinging the possum over his head, doing the same thing. Like it is. It almost is a dark suit man because it's just a man repeating his actions on the side of the road as an apparition.
Basically. And then my other and I he's like, yeah, I've seen that dude before. And I was like, really? And I thought he was fucking with me. And he's like, no, I've totally seen that dude. And then my friend looked at me and I was kind of like crossing my arms, like, come on, man. And then my other friend goes, do you doubt that it exists? Like, knowing where you grew up, do you doubt? And I was kind of like, oh shit, I've been put into a corner now. Like I'm all of a sudden like a, you know, a doubter of these things. So right. Like it was actually kind of cool because it was verifying, you know, and I told my sister and she goes, see, I told you. And then, you know, everybody ends up pointing their fingers at me because I was a doubter and I should have just known that there is a dude out in the woods out in Silverton who swings a dead possum over his head. It's just a thing.
That's like, just why question it?
Well, the thing is I feel like there is some like strange kismet that you move to that town, because I think that I'm only, you know, there's going to be a million people, maybe not a million, but a lot of people that come out of the woodwork, because if you don't mind, I'm going to post the fact that I'm on this show to social media.
Oh, I would love if you did that, because a lot of guests, believe it or not, Micah, don't.
Oh, I can't believe that.
this show That's is unreal. This show is that underground where I have I have guests, many guests that take their time, talk to me, we have a great time, and then just never say a word about it.
Oh, that's bullshit, man. Come on.
Still love them, and I have them on. I have them on the show.
Well, so here's the thing. Like, you know, I'm not saying this should be like our like Art Bell, Widley Strieber relationship beginning salvo.
First of 700 guest appearances.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. And I do love Art Bell and I do love Woodley Strieber. Of course. But like, I will say that, like, I think what's going to happen is, and I'm not saying that this should be a Silverton centric podcast, but I would tell you 100%, you are going to have people coming out of the woodwork if I post a link to this, and they're going to be like, dude, how could you not tell the story of, you know,
I would love that.
The kid who was milking a cow at Mallory's Dairy and got kicked in the head by a cow, and he fell into the, you know, he drowned in milk, and he fucking, you know what I mean? Like, and then all of a sudden there's this milky white ghost that shows up, you know, there's going to be, well, I don't know if that's, I totally ad libbed that one. That was
a milkian people coming out of the woodworks.
Yeah, that's a 2% story. but anyway, so for real, you're going to have some people come out of the woodwork that
great.
Potentially you're going to, you might have to like do some follow up on that.
I hope so. I hope people reach out, because no one ever reaches out. I ask people to reach out all the time, very specifically about anything and everything. And no, very few people actually interact. So if there are some local,
well, here's the thing.
Silvertonians, is Silvertonians the correct?
Yeah, that's the preferred nomenclature, dude.
Okay. If there are any Silvertonians that want to reach out, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. And I'll see you around town.
Oh my God. I think you may have just opened fucking Pandora's box, because there's
good,
and I'm telling you, I'm gonna come down and we'll go have some beers, because or whatever, you know, we could, it could be White Claws, it could be 2% milk like we were just talking about, it could be anything, you can have whatever beverage you'd like, but you need to be prepared for some serious bullshit. It's gonna be on like Donkey Kong.
I that's how I live my life, so I'm prepared at all times. And
know that you're perennially on Mistin's guest list, so you got to come check us out of the show.
Absolutely, I would love to, man. Because I still haven't seen you guys, because I just haven't. It's COVID things.
COVID things and you moved to Silverton. So
I moved to Silverton.
I can't blame you for not wanting to drive up the road.
It'll take more planning, but
it'll happen. Perhaps we'll play down there because we, you know.
Well, yeah.
Oh, by the way, sure. By the way, last thing I want to tell you is that Mac's place used to be a brothel. So we can talk about that next time.
Oh boy.
I'm sure that's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot happening.
There's so many. I mean, anywhere you go. Yeah. Any place there's places of ill repute in any place. And if the building is still standing, like, yeah. It's got a history and I love it. Yeah. We will talk about that. There was something that, I wanted to bring up before you mentioned something about a locker. I just real quick, what is this weirdness?
Okay, so your next guest from Silverton that's gonna have to kind of walk you through that town is a guy named Steve Carver, and that's his real name. I mean, there's so many great Silverton people names like Chad Kill. That's his real name. Boog. There was a kid named Boog Stanerson. Steve Carver is like a real human name. And Steve Carver's a great guy. Uh-huh. But he used to tell the story of this kid. I'm not gonna say last names. But this the story of Dead Earl, like the word dead, like you're dead, and a kid named Earl. Mm-hmm. And Earl apparently was huffing gas out of his dad's pickup truck, and it was like an old Ford pickup, and they had those gas tanks that kind of sat beside the driver's side door. Huffing gas out of that thing standing up, and he huffed so much that he got too high and he passed out and fell into a mud puddle and drowned. So and that's super sad, and he was a young high schooler, and so he abandoned, you know, like he left a lot behind, friends, but the big thing that he left behind that left the big legacy in Silverton was his locker. And his locker was apparently, I believe the number was 387, and that was in what was then, when he was going to high school in the mid 80s, it was 387, and that would have been freshman hall. But by the time I got to high school, that was the junior hall. Mm-hmm. So Steve Carver told me when I became a junior, he was a few years older than me. He goes, "You need to get that locker, man. That's Dead Earl's locker. And I'll tell you why after you get the locker." And so I secured that locker for myself. And he goes,
"Oh, okay, dude. What? Okay."
Yeah. He goes, "So yeah, I secured the locker. It was destined to be a thing." So I got the locker, and he goes, "Okay, dude, so here's the thing. Go to Roth's IGA, which is the local grocer of choice, and get yourself a bottle of Coke and take it to that locker and put it in there on a Monday morning. And I can guarantee you that on Friday afternoon, it'll still be cold." And I did. And I can tell you that it's actually true. I don't know if it was because of the fact that, maybe the locker had, maybe it was close to a duct that kept it cold in there, but like that Coke was ice cold a week later.
What the fuck?
So,
I don't know. Earl's ice cold soul.
Yeah. I mean, and that now is the middle school, and it'll probably still be the middle school when you're a kid, if you stick around in Silverton, goes there, and I can... Yeah. I can roam the halls with you and figure out exactly where it was. I could triangulate it on a map and figure it out. And because I want your kid to have cold beverages.
I want him to have cold beverages too. That's the whole reason. That's the whole reason I wanted to have children.
Well, I mean, that's
just to ensure, that there's a living creature in my care that has cold beverages.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, why? Yeah. I mean, why would you walk around with a cooler that, full of ice, heavy and cumbersome, when you could just have a locker that you go back to?
Yeah, a dead kid's locker, a gas huffing kid's locker.
Yeah, I mean, that's another, like, gas huffing kid's locker. This goes in the rock opera too, I think. And I'm just saying, there's a lot to unpack here. But I, like I said, like last thing I'm going to say is like, you're going to have people that are going to, okay, first of all, they're going to tell you two things. I've got so many more stories than that asshole had. And then,
yeah, you had the wrong person on your show, dude. I'm the person you should talk to.
Exactly. And you should take every single one of them seriously, because I know what I'm talking about, but you know, I am always willing to back down and listen to somebody else's story. Cause like, you know, I mean, I love that town. I love that you're living there. I love the fact that it is gaining status within, you know, within people that want to elevate its value for what it is, which is a quirky fucking rad place. So mm-hmm. I'm excited that you're there.
Well, I'm glad to be here. And it seems like your family has had a really good, like a strong hand in keeping this town quirky and artsy and weird and, you know, talented.
Well, my dad was definitely that dude. He loved that town. Oh my God. Like, I don't know what it was that he found some sort of like kismet with it. He just loved that place. And I love it too. To this day, I absolutely adore the place. I don't live there, but we've flirted and entertained the idea of moving back. And it's just a matter of like, you know, making sure that the I's are dotted and T's are crossed in order to make something like that happen. But I certainly never had any kind of misgivings about growing up there. I can tell you it was a kind of a little magical wonderland. And there was, you know, all sorts of crazy fringe shit going on that would keep you interested in hanging out too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, thank you for sharing with me all these fucking crazy stories. Cause you know, I'm just walking around. I'm not trying to figure it out. I don't think I'll ever figure it out. I don't even have my own hometown figured out. I know this place. You walk around and it feels special in a lot of ways. And it feels special in a very weird way a lot of the time to me, where it's like, all right, there is some skeletons in this town's closet. And it is kind of weird. And it is, but it's also, I mean, a lot of places can be creepy. I don't really feel like this place is creepy, but I feel like it's got, it's just got ghosts and it's got.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what we're talking about. It's like we're tying it back to the beginning. It's like that 45th parallel thing. Because if you want to view it, you know, as the zero, you know, like the equator as being positive and happy and light, and then the, you know, up at the pole, you're dealing with some darkness. You know, right in the middle, you've got both. You've got both stories that are kind of equating everything. Right? It's like. Mm-hmm. You're going to have some darkness and some light in a place like that. It's a temperate rainforest. You're going to have all sorts of crazy shit, you know, and crazy, you know, I mean, I don't know. I watched every season of X-Files, and I remember my favorite part about X-Files was the fact that most of those first bunch of seasons were filmed in Vancouver, BC, and it felt like they were filmed in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd see all the fog and the fir trees, and you'd see all that stuff, and it made you feel like, hey, you know,
right,
cool, weird shit is supposed to happen in places like this. And it's right. And it's like maybe not always, you know, negative weird shit, and maybe not always positive weird shit, but it's just weird shit that happens. So like
weird shit happens out here.
Yeah, I mean, weird shit does happen. And that town, I would urge you to walk around with a sense of wonder, because you know, being that it is a small town, I think you can put a lot of boundaries on it. But I think that, you know, as the town diversifies, and I know that it has, I know that it has changed a lot in for the positive. And you know, there's a lot of different kind of people represented there than it used to be. It used to be kind of just like white bread USA, but like I think the more it diversifies, the more it adds to the mystique and coolness of the cultural impact of the place. But I think that also within that, you just have to have that sense of wonder that there's just so much shit that has happened in the history of every town, but like every town is different. And that one has some real wonder behind it. There is some strange shit going on in those valleys and hills, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a funny place. And, you know, reach out to me, man. I got your phone number. And absolutely, if you got questions, just be like, hey, man, what do you know about this? And I'll be like, hey, first of all, don't listen to that guy. He's full of shit.
No, man, I love it. I love having that local kind of source to suss out the riffraff.
But oh, yeah. And I'll get down there probably after the holidays, but I'll get down there and we should go wander around and have do the thing.
Yeah. Yep. Let's have some drinks and not participate in or witness a church burning. But if it were to happen, we can't avert our eyes. We have to watch.
Well, I mean, if it happened just as I showed up into town, I think that 100% I would be. Yeah, they'd probably banish me from that place, man.
Where's Dr. Lord? We're going to need him.
Oh, he's out in Evans Valley, and we can talk about Evans Valley another time.
I would love to. I don't even know what that is.
That's a whole other episode, man.
All right. You know, maybe you know, maybe you don't. I do the exhumed excerpts from the tomb of the promulgated at the end of the show now with the guest. So if you have the time to indulge me, I can tell you a story.
Please do. Please.
But I got to take a sip here real quick. All right.
Yeah.
It's a strong one. Hold on.
Ooh, my dog just barked too, right when you said that.
He knows. She knows.
He knows.
Okay.
He knows.
Okay. So I got a story. Well, you're a drummer.
Uh-huh.
Are you a Buddy Rich guy?
Oh, I love. Okay. Let me briefly just preface this by saying, absolutely, he is one of the best technicians of all times. Like, it technically, on such another level and such a natural, but he was also a natural asshole. So, like,
I loved him on Sesame Street.
And like every time he was on Johnny Carson, he was a gem. I mean, it was just like to watch him, you know, he was an entertainer, but he was also. When the camera was off, he was an asshole.
Killer blast beats, this guy.
Yeah, yeah. But to be honest, yeah, I love everything about him, even the asshole. And just, well, yeah, maybe the ownership of his domain was just next level. But yeah, tell me the story. Let's go.
Maybe you'll like him even more after I tell you about the shit he has experienced. So I got a hold of some old Canadian kind of newsletter, Saucers, Space and Science, or whatever the hell it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make sure. Oh yeah, Saucers, Space and Science. This is from 1967, number 49, issue number 49 here. Let me find my fucking space again. But it's titled The Buddy Rich Story. And I had no idea about any of this. So this is what they say. In May of this year, 1967, Buddy Rich and his orchestra were playing at the Palais Royal Ballroom in Toronto. Gary Ferrier of the Toronto radio station Chum 1050. It's a fucking great name. Interviewed him, and being an avid follower of UFOs, asked Buddy if he had ever seen any. Buddy said he saw a total of 7 so far at 3 different times. The first one was at Miami Beach. It was about 30,000 feet high, glowed yellow orange. flew in a straight line, stopped abruptly, lurched, and then went straight up and turned a bluish red color. The second time, he was driving between Las Vegas and California with his wife when they felt a shimmering heat and saw a red glow about 30,000 feet overhead. Feeling heat from 30,000 feet.
Yeah, that's wild.
It made a pass directly over the car. Rich stopped the car and pulled over to the side of the road. It made another pass, this time about 10,000 feet above the car. The third time he saw two glowing white objects near Atlanta, Georgia, with his brother. They stopped overhead and did figure eights as if playing tag.
Whoa.
An ex-RAF pilot who was an engineer for the show called a fighter base 13 miles away and found out that over 500 calls had been received in a matter of 5 minutes. The UFOs took off straight up. The story appeared in the paper, and about 1 week later, Rich was visited by two men. This happened on a Saturday night about 10 years ago. So 1957, all right. Rich was playing on a boat on the Potomac River near Washington when the men, one an FBI man, the other a Secret Service man, questioned him regarding the sighting. One said, "We understand that you think you saw a flying saucer." Rich was offended at this statement and said he didn't think, but he knew what he saw. There's that asshole. He's like, yep. Motherfucker, don't. I'm Buddy Rich. And I see UFOs.
Yeah, don't tell me what I think.
Don't tell me.
Yeah.
The interview took half an hour and one of them took notes. All right. 6 months later, while living at Forest Hills, New York, and getting ready to go to work about 9:30 a.m., two men with badges and wallets said they wanted to talk to him about his so-called sighting. They asked all over again for details, and one of the men checked with the notes taken previously by the other two men. About a month before Rich's visit to Toronto, he was visited by a government man, an ex-colonel in the Air Force, who told him a far-out tale about a trip he had taken. Rich believes about three-quarters of the story. He says it was the most frightening thing that ever happened to him and that it was a great experience. Buddy believes we are being observed, and the reason they haven't landed is because of our immature attitude. And they would be fired upon. And that's the story. That's Buddy Rich's take.
I'm in, man. I'm 100% with Buddy on this. Like, first of all, yeah, I'm in. There is no first of all or anything else. It's just, I'm in. That's it.
You're with Buddy.
I'm with Buddy all the way. The only thing I am weirded out by is, like, if I felt heat waves from 30,000 feet away, that's literally like 6 miles. That's one hot ass UFO if it's blasting right? Heat rays.
Yeah.
So I can't verify that. I've not heard any kind of contact stories that involve a 6 mile heat blast, but I could be wrong. But I'm with him in the sense that, like, yeah, we're being watched. And I mean, who wouldn't want to, you know, if you were an alien, why would it, like, you're going to want to keep your eyes on the most exceptional of the humans, right?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. He's like, this guy's a fucking freak.
And he's a freak of nature. Like,
he's got to be alien hybrid. They're keeping tabs on their experiments. They're
yeah, they would love that, dude. It's kind of like they would love to watch, like, Steve Prefontaine run, or they would want to, you know, like, right. or Michael Jordan play basketball. You know, God, fucking be pissed about the fact that they make basketball happen inside these giant mega domes. Like, they should have done it in the open so that the UFOs could just come straight down and watch Michael Jordan dunk on some motherfucker. You know,
what if the dome is a spaceship?
They're all
spaceships.
They're in there watching. Wow. Yeah, free admission. Yeah, 20,000 human paying. What does an alien pay to watch a Bulls game? I don't know. Nothing. But Yeah, exactly. Because they have the shit figured out. That's why they're their next level. They are able to travel here interdimensionally or interspatially, and we're just stuck. Yeah, we're just stuck to live in this hyperloop of stupidity that we've created.
You've entered the Moda Center. doesn't that sound interdimensional?
Well, it absolutely does. Yeah, you're in the Moda Center. Oh, you're 300 level? Oh, you know, yeah. Yeah, you would think 300 level, kind of like in Scientology, would be like way better than the 100 level, but it's actually the opposite.
It's worse, believe it or not.
Because that's what humans do. We're a fucking species of contradictions, man. We're the worst.
Yeah, it's like golf.
Yeah.
The lower the score, the better. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I can't wait till the Sasquatchers are eating human burgers.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't even cook us, man. They ain't even got time for that.
I mean, they need us like sushi, just raw.
Hair and all. All right, man. Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you again for being here with me. What do you got going on? I know you got some art.
Oh my God.
Shit going on. You got some music shit going on.
I'm drumming wise, I'm kind of a, you know, I play with all sorts of people, jazz gigs, you know, and then stuff with like Tony Furtado and whatever, you know, singer songwriter stuff with Stephen Ashbrook or who, you know, but the thing that, you know, that hypes me and that I'm stoked about being a native Oregonian and him too is, Mistins with Sean Krogan. And our next big gig will be after the new year, January 6th. Let's commemorate the storming of the Capitol by a bunch of redheaded assholes. Let's do it together. It'll be at, oh God, what is the name of that place? Shit. Holocene. We're going to be at Holocene.
Oh, okay.
We're going to bring some punk rock to Holocene, which will
that place needs it.
Yeah. Well, and I would tell you that will be, this is a big secret. Sean and I recorded bass on the album and we had a bass player before that. We had Alan Hunter playing bass with us and he just got busy doing other stuff. And so we've been doing the duo thing live and I play bass on the record, like I said, but we have a bass player that's going to premiere his skills that night. And I cannot tell you who it is, but stay tuned to the Mistins Instagram page, which is the_Mistins, and we're a rock and roll band from Portland, Oregon.
I know who it is.
Oh, you don't tell anybody.
I don't know who it is, but I know who it is.
Yeah, don't go to Salamander Island telling anybody.
I'm gonna go to Max and start spreading rumors.
Yeah, man, just shout it off the back deck at the. Just be like, hey, man, I know what's up, and then people are gonna be like, what?
Spit at the creek.
Yeah, but yeah, so come see us if you can. Come to January 6th.
Holocene. Yeah. Okay. And I've been noticing you got your art.
Yeah. Oh shit, I forgot.
What's going on with your paintings?
Well, I've had a couple different little shows here and there, and I have kind of like a gallery rep who's going through some health stuff. So I'm just kind of representing myself. But Jose at Revival Drum Shop has been like incredibly supportive. And he loves helping drummers who have, you know, multiple creative outlets. And he wanted me to show some art down at the shop. And so until early January, I've got 5 paintings down there. And they're all pretty, they're all very influenced by drummers. And there's like little tags underneath that kind of tell you the title of the painting and who the drummers are. And the drummers vary from guys like, you know, modern guys like Mark Juliana, all the way back to like Mo Tucker for Velvet Underground. And I mean, a million different amazing drummers who have influenced me through the years. And they're all kind of like documented on the painting. And it's the way that I paint is in response to what I'm hearing. So, mm-hmm. You know, and Some might argue from listening to this podcast that I may not be a great listener, but I'm a pretty good listener in a lot of ways. So like,
so you're listening to music while you're painting.
Absolutely. Every brush stroke, I'm always listening to music. Okay. I can't not. So it's now a matter of like documenting what I'm listening to and then kind of looking at like the result, like whether that's through color or shape or how I use a line or how I express it. It's kind of becoming like a cool series of documents. It's like it's a visual record of listening to, you know, oral records. So I'm excited about it, and the pieces are really cool, and they've been, you know, cool responses from them. And Jose, like I said, is just super supportive of people expressing themselves, because drums are one avenue, but I think as anybody who straps on a guitar or puts a microphone up to their mouth or plays drums or whatever they do, or synth or piano, anything you can do to get that information out and get that get those emotions out is important. But I think doing it cross discipline is important as well, if you have those means and you have the time, or if you have the will to want to do that. So great, it's important,
man. Fuck yeah, man. Well, I've been enjoying the paintings that I see, and it's like the you know, when people are, you know, tripping high as fuck and they say that they're hearing colors, man.
Yeah,
you're hearing colors in a way.
Yeah, I think that I, you know, I have a little bit of a mild synesthesia issue, and I think it kind of, you know, like when I'm hanging with people who aren't musicians or aren't artists or whatever, like I sound like a jerk. I sound mean when I say this kind of stuff, but like when I hear some people talking about life through these lenses that are very kind of planar or simplistic, and like I admire the fact that they can kind of distill life to some very kind of simple terms and simple expressions. But for me, it has to be kind of multifaceted, right? Like it's just a thing. Like it has to be that way for me, and I tend to want to hang out with people who feel that same way. And though I have admiration for people who can, like I said, just like distill it down to very simple terms, I'd prefer to be with people who engage in all senses. And you know, I think that when you engage in all senses, you're more open to what this podcast is about, which is 100% that idea of, you know, like what's out there, what are we a part of, you know, like what are we doing, you know, like
right,
why are we doing so well? So man, I appreciate what you're doing, man.
Well, I appreciate you appreciating me, and I appreciate you. And we're gonna have to, you know, drive our UFO to Salamander Creek, cook up some Sasquatch burgers on our church fire over there, and you know, drink some, I don't know, White Claws, maybe break an ankle or two.
Perfect. Next time we hang out. I'll be there.
First time we hang out. We've never hung out.
You know, there's potential that we may have hung out at the CD Baby warehouse back in the day, but I don't remember much from back then. But yeah, let's do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hang out for the first time again. I can't wait.
Yes, perfect. All right, I'll see you down there.
I'll see you soon.
Take care, man. See ya.
You too. Later. Okay, there it is. There it was. I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you you want to visit the town of Silverton, Oregon now. Well, maybe if you're passing through, if you're somewhere near, you can just pop in and check it out. And, you know, don't do anything weird while you're here, because enough weird shit has happened, apparently. So thank you, Micah, for being here. That was excellent. And between Micah and Mateo, a couple UFO chase stories, right? I mean, they both were followed by UFOs. And that was not my plan, but that's how it worked out this episode. And, hey, that's just the way it goes. Now, I am going to play a song from the Mistons called My Heart. And you know what's funny is I thought that I had played a song from the Mistons when Sean Krogan was on my show. He was on episode 40, and time flies so fast. I swear, he was on the show in March of 2021, and I feel like it was just a few months ago. Well, like a couple months ago. Seriously, just like it just happened. And I thought I had already played a Mistin song on the Krogan episode, but I didn't. I don't even know if I'd come around to playing my guest's music on the show at that point. But anyway, I just wanted to say that because I was like, oh, this is going to be the second Mistin song I play on my show. But it's the first, which is unfortunate. I should have put one on the Krogan episode. But here is My Heart, and I'm going to play the whole thing because it's only a minute and 50 seconds long. So here we go. Here's the Mistins. There you go. Great stuff. The Mistins from Portland, Oregon. Sean Krogan, Micah Castle, and a new bass player that we don't know who it is, but we will soon find out. So check them out. I'm going to post links on the show notes. I'll post a link to their Bandcamp. But check out Micah's art. He is an excellent fucking artist. He does a lot of stuff. I'm going to post links to his Instagram and to his actual website, but you should check out micahcastle.com. That is micahcastle.com, and have your fucking mind blown by this very talented individual. That's it for the week. Thank you, everyone. Now, I'm going to make a Spotify playlist like I always do. You can add to it. It's always collaborative. Look up LR058 or just get in the show notes of this episode, and there'll be a link to it. There'll be a link to it on LostRhetoric.com. And listen to, you know, some songs from the bands that I talked about in the What I'm Listening To segment at the beginning of the show. And get on LostRhetoric.com, check out the shop, and buy some stuff. Maybe buy some stuff. I would love that. And again, reach out to me, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Instagram, lostrhetoricpodcast. Twitter, lost_rhetoric. And that is it for the week, folks. I will see you soon. I am going to do one more episode in 2021. And I can't wait to bring it to you. So until then, please, everyone, stay sane and stay safe.